The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of Audlin Brown, BD Developments, Stem Cell Technologies, and listeners like you. Redefining success for the purpose economy, Mike Rollins says, is to become part of the rapidly growing movement toward social purpose in business. The social purpose focus creates healthier communities, restoration of our shared environment, and better outcomes for companies, staff, customers, and other stakeholders. Rollins says the path to developing this framework emerged from his work with the nonprofit sector, a sector that required new brand strategies that enriched and enhanced their organization's messaging. Well, the next step on the path to a social purpose framework was the development of theory of change, which is a methodology to set out intended social outcomes. I invited Mike Rollins, the CEO and president of Junction, to join me for a conversation that matters about social purpose and how it focuses business to accept responsibility for outputs, outcomes, and building a better world by being in business. Mike, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Stu. We're looking forward to our conversation.
This concept of social purpose really is emerging as something that businesses can get a hold of, but they can also measure results. Yeah. Unlike some of our earlier iterations of this, you know, kind of concept.
That's right.
How do you define exactly what social purpose is?
So the simplest definition, I think, comes from the United Way Social Purpose Institute, which is based here in Vancouver. And their definition is simply that a social purpose business is one that contributes to a better world by the very act of doing business. A more complicated definition, slightly nuanced definition, came from the British Academy, and they did a lot of public consultation and developed a definition that basically says the same. Social purpose business is one that contributes good things to the world by the very act of doing business, without at the same time contributing to the problems.
And that, I think, is the defining characteristic, isn't
it? Yeah, it is, right? We don't cause the same problems that we then set out to contribute, and therefore sort of clean with one hand what we've dirtied with the other. But my favorite definition comes from Cambridge, from the Cambridge Institute for Sustainability Leadership. And there's an independent professor there, Dr. Victoria Hirth. And she did some work with the British Standards Institution to develop their standard on social purpose business. And her definition is this: social purpose business is one that makes an optimal strategic contribution to the long-term well-being of all people on the planet. So that's a big definition. We'll break that down.
Okay.
An optimal contribution. So optimal meaning it's optimized for the size of your company.
Yeah.
We don't expect a corner store to solve for climate change, but we do expect them to have a meaningful impact on the local community, right? Look after the people in the community, watch for the kids that come through. There's something that you can do for community. So optimized for the size of the business. Strategic contribution in that it is a contribution that's considered at the highest levels of decision making in the enterprise. So this should be considered by the board of directors. The purpose should be overseen by the board of directors, or if you don't have a board of directors, by the CEO or the owner of the enterprise. So it's strategic. And it's a contribution to the long-term well-being of all people on the planet. It doesn't have to be the entire solution, right? Most of these large problems that we face, like climate change and biodiversity loss, income inequality, these are challenges that are going to take lots of us contributing together to solve. So the point is that you're making a contribution, and it's understood that you're going to try and measure your contribution and improve it, optimize it. So optimal strategic contribution to the long-term well-being of all people in the planet.
The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of Audlin Brown, BD Developments, Stem Cell Technologies, and listeners like you. How do you determine whether or not you are hitting these very lofty goals?
Right.
What are the measurement devices that somebody could say, yes, I am optimizing, it is strategic, it is beneficial? How do you measure that in a meaningful way?
Yeah, so there's two parts to that answer, I think. One is that there is a a lot of frameworks for measurement. There's lots of people that have tried to solve that nut. Mm-hmm. There are some widely accepted standards, things like the Sustainable Development Goals, which were a set of 17 goals that were articulated by the UN and signed off by every member nation. So they are the global collective understanding of what a sustainable world looks like and the 17 things that we need to achieve to get to a sustainable world. So there are large frameworks like that, and there are simpler frameworks that might be relevant to particular industries. The cosmetics industry has its own set of standards. Each industry, the clothing, sports industry, yeah. Clothing, they all seem to have their own set of standards that are particularly relevant to their space. But that still doesn't help me think about what's my optimal strategic contribution. So the other part of the story is what you mentioned in the intro, and that's this notion of a theory of change. A theory of change is a long-established framework and tool that's been used in philanthropy and nonprofits for a long time. And we expect philanthropy and nonprofits to set these big, lofty, ambitious visions and use funds to help move us there. But often those big, lofty ambitions are far bigger than any one charity could solve, right? Just as no one business is going to solve for climate change, no one charity is going to solve for cures for cancer, right? It's going to be collaborations.
Or poverty elimination.
Right.
Yeah.
Whatever cause we might choose in our charity. Mm-hmm. But we can set the ambition. So my firm's ambition, Junction Strategy's ambition, is an economy remade to serve the common good. So that's a big ambition. Mm-hmm. I can think of lots of people that would be interested in that. I can think of nonprofit groups and social advocates. I can think of some legislators and lawmakers that might be interested in that. There's certainly lots of businesses that would benefit from that, educational institutions. So there's lots of people contributing to that. And we could define what that means. What is an economy remade to serve the common good? Well, it's probably got tax policies that even out income so that it's equal and there's fair access for everybody. It's probably opportunities for education for everybody. There's any number of things that we might include as a definition, any of which we could think of as a precursor to the achievement of that vision. But it's really hard to know how to push any of those things. But I do know, on the other hand, what I can control. I know what the outputs from my business are. I know that we deliver strategies and plans and we engage teams and develop organizational cultures, and those things deliver some outcomes through our clients' work. But even then, there's a stretch from those outcomes to those long-term aspirations. And that's why it's a theory of change, right? We theorize that by cultivating these shorter and medium-term outcomes, we're going to set the conditions for the longer term conditions that we're really aiming for, right? And so part of our work is to measure those outcomes, be in conversation with our clients, measure their success, right? Invent ways to be really creative about how well is their culture performing? How much is that accelerating their work? How effective is their strategy? How much did it need to change through the course of implementation? And then connect those to the long-term efforts and recognize that there's always going to be a learning space. We're not going to get everything right the first time. We're probably not going to get everything right the fifth time. But we can learn along the way and we can adjust. And so the theory of change helps us to understand what we need to adjust. It also helps us understand with whom we should be partnering to bring about those long-term conditions. And that's how we cultivate this sort of sense of community around these big visions like an economy remade to serve the common good.
You know, a couple of the, I guess, earlier iterations of this were ESG.
Yeah.
Or DEI.
Yeah.
And when I think about what you're saying, it doesn't mean that ESG or DEI are now to be discarded. They actually become part of this larger framework.
That's what we think, yeah. And there's a whole continuum of that kind of work. I mean, if we were sitting here 20 years ago, we'd be talking about sustainability, wouldn't we?
Yes.
Right? Companies were starting to think about, oh, environmental footprint and this climate change, we probably should pay attention to this and understand it. And so they were doing the simple things like making sure there was a recycling bin underneath everybody's desk and maybe starting to manage their energy use and changing out light bulbs. And that conversation became a conversation that included social outcomes. So we went from just the environmental to including the social and the community outcomes. And then financial markets wanted to understand the risk in those business from their exposure to environmental issues or social issues or governance issues, ESG. So ESG comes from finance and is really about measuring and mitigating risk. Mm-hmm. So it's about managing the downside effects of being in business. And most businesses create waste. Most businesses emit carbon, Most businesses use energy, they use water, they have an impact on their local communities. And measuring those and understanding where the risks are for investors and shareholders was step one.
Mm-hmm.
But that really is just step one, right? The next step is, well, how do we prioritize which of these to minimize? We can't solve for all of this. So now we come to materiality analysis. Which of these things is actually material to our business and most material to our stakeholders? And so which ones are the ones that we should work on first? And then somebody had the wise idea of, okay, well, why don't we flip it? Instead of managing the negative downsides, why don't we look for the opportunities, right? Which is really what we're doing in
about
materiality, which is the best place for us to play.
Yeah.
Well, how can we make a positive impact? And impact has been the jargon for the last 5 to 7, maybe 10 years,
mm-hmm.
right? But I think you're right. I think that all of those get covered by this notion of purpose and using the business as a force for good, which is language that comes from B-Lab, one of the major nonprofits that has established a certification for social purpose business.
Mm-hmm.
How do we use business as a force for good in society? So rather than just going about business and generating returns for shareholders and managing the negative effects, how do we also make a positive contribution to community and society?
The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of Audlin Brown, BD Developments, Stem Cell Technologies, and listeners like you. When I was much younger, I took my first economics course in the spirit of Milton Friedman. The concept was, well, no, the responsibility of this company is to make money for its shareholders.
Yeah.
And to the point, and things have shifted so much to the point now we go, no, that can't be your only purpose. But I can hear people saying, but are you telling me that it's like you're bad because you want to be in business and make money?
Right.
And that they may turn off from this discussion because
sure.
they think somehow it's as though this is a condemnation of business. I don't think it is.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No, I run a for-profit business. I want to drive profits to my shareholders, of which I am one.
Yeah.
And a social purpose business is unabashedly a for-profit business, right? We're not asking you not to make profit. We're not asking you to close your business. We're not asking you to turn it into a nonprofit. In the same way that Milton Friedman gets a hard knock these days, I think that that is a caricature of the conversation that we're having.
Right? Yes.
Milton Friedman said, yes, the role of the business is to drive profits to shareholders within the rules of the game.
Yeah.
Right? If we complete the quote, within the rules of the game at the time he was writing, it was a very, very different tax regimen in the United States. There was a lot more regulation in some of the sectors that he was studying at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The rules of the game were a fair playing field. But when we reduce and reduce and reduce the corporate tax burden to the point where we can't even support a healthy middle class in a country and an economy, we've got a problem. Because any sociologist will tell you, or any economist will tell you, that if you erode the middle class, you erode stability in the society. And surely businesses and nonprofits and legislators, surely we're all interested in making sure that we have a stable, healthy society.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one definition of a healthy society might be a construct that looks after the long-term well-being of all people on the planet.
Well, if that had been the mindset when there was so much offshoring of production,
right,
from especially middle America, we would have seen a completely different landscape than the one that we see today.
Yeah.
And that offshoring was driven by this desire to maximize profits.
Yeah.
But not thinking about, in doing so, what's the impact going to be on local communities? I have to tell you, I was in a what would have been a lumber community on northern Lake Superior.
Yeah.
That used to have a pulp mill and a sawmill.
Right.
Those two mills got acquired by an American interest,
mm-hmm.
that then shut them down,
right.
Gutted the mills because they just wanted the equipment, and suddenly the main income earners in those
sure.
families,
the main employer
had
in the
to
town.
Go somewhere else.
Right.
The town has never recovered.
Sure.
It's a ghost town.
Yeah.
So making those kinds of decisions that are driven around short-term profit and not looking at what the long-term consequences of local communities are is not the way to keep going. There is no sustainability when you do that.
True. Yeah, great point. And I think this that part of the conversation gets political very quickly. And I think that's okay. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple of things I'd say. One is if we zoom out a long way and look at multiple economies, and including the countries to which those jobs and that work has been outsourced, have we lifted collective well-being across all of those economies? So that's an interesting question, right?
It
doesn't
is.
Serve that small town very much, but is it serving a small town somewhere else? Have we created jobs somewhere else? So it isn't necessarily a net negative in the global context. But that's not usually how we think, is it? Right? We look at a local community. And so what I would say about that is, yes, we need to be looking at the long-term well-being. But we also need to understand that our economy needs to evolve if it's going to thrive. Now, I'm a pretty progressive liberal guy, but I respect Preston Manning, who is a pretty conservative fellow. And I saw him speak at the Responsible Investment Association conference some years ago. One of the keynote speakers. And he and I would differ a lot on a lot of policy things, but he said something in his keynote. It was the central point of his keynote, and it really stood out for me. And his was, he was disappointed, at least, that Canada hasn't done a better job of building secondary and tertiary industries on top of our natural resource capacity. So what might it have looked like if instead of just offshoring the lumber mill and then re-importing 2x4s and 4x8s, what would have looked like if we'd built more advanced wood engineering and had plants and a college in that town? Similarly with oil and gas, what would it look like if we had done more refinery development in Canada and weren't shipping raw materials like straight out of the ground into a ship over to somewhere else to be refined only to be brought back? So we can talk about the economic problems of that. We can talk about the carbon problems of transporting weighty stuff back and forth across the world. But we could also be talking about why don't we have a really advanced chemical and plastics industry headquartered in Canada? Why was that not developed on top of a secondary refining industry, on top of the primary resource industry? So there's a whole set of policy questions there that are long-term policy questions that are the role of government, and that could have been advocated for by business, and government could have incentivized businesses to develop those industries, and we miss those opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I personally think in the Canadian context, that's the tyranny of abundance at play, right? We have this incredible wealth of resources, and it's really easy to waste them instead of...
Because we had easy access to great ROI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of Audlin Brown, BD Developments, Stem Cell Technologies, and listeners like you. I actually had done an interview with Eleanor Newman, who wrote a book with a professor from University of Guelph about, you know, how to grow food on Mars. She was talking about food security when I, and she said, but the thing that you have to understand, like, we actually have incredible intelligence here in Canada about how to grow food. But rather than just growing food and selling it, we have technology, we have expertise, we can develop products and services that we can sell to other countries around the world and help them grow the food that they need, rather than saying, well, we'll grow it and put it in a ship.
Right.
Well, it reduces carbon footprint and it meets those objectives. And this is the kind of thinking I think that can help really move us to the place that we want to get to.
Yeah.
So
there's so many interesting things in that, right? The imagination to make that leap.
Yeah.
Right? The imagination of an enterprise to think about how it might diversify what it's doing in order to help make that leap. And that's the sort of thinking that that I think is what makes social purpose so interesting to me, right? It is one thing to develop a business that earns a profit on a consistent basis. That's hard. It is not easy to start up, right? We read all of the fancy business magazines and talk about the unicorns, these private companies with billion-dollar valuations. You'd think they were a dime a dozen. They are far from it. It's incredibly difficult to build a sustainable business if it's at a small scale. It's even more difficult to build one that has a social purpose. But the social purpose business will generate more customer loyalty. 87% of people in North America say that they will choose a social purpose brand or a brand that contributes to causes they care about over a competitor. That's up like 90%, nearly double in 20 years. Social purpose businesses in 2019, publicly traded social purpose businesses, outperformed the market by 134%. Dramatically better performing businesses, right? So this isn't actually about making money and doing good over here. This is about using the power of social purpose to build a healthier, stronger, more durable business.
It reminds me of reading Stephen Covey's, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Yeah. The part at the beginning of the book that just really strikes me is, number one, be a good person. So number one, be a good company.
Yeah.
So in the last couple of minutes that we have remaining here, how does your company help companies that say, okay, I agree with you, but the roadmap from where I am to where I want to get to is not so easy to navigate. How do you help companies work their way along that path?
Yeah, it's not easy to navigate. And there are people that are sort of exploring impact and they're playing around the edges and trying to figure things out. And we kind of meet them where they're at and help them take the next steps. And there are those that are advocates. They're excited about it. They've found some early success and they're ready to take next steps. And then there's a handful of businesses that are real leaders that we look to as the benchmarks and we learn from them, right? So a lot of our work is the strategy. What are the right steps for you to take from where you are today to start moving towards social purpose? You may not make the leap overnight. You may not make the leap in a year, may not make the leap in a decade, but you can make progress every year, right? And then the second part of the work that we do is how are we going to measure our progress, right? So we help them develop these impact measurement frameworks that might draw on something like the SDGs or might use those industry-specific toolkits, but we help them develop the framework and then the plan to actually do the measurement work. And again, right-sizing it for their organization. We don't all have massive data pools and the ability to do all of the research. What's the right piece for us to do? And then the third part of our business is talking about that stuff, right? Yeah. Promoting it for marketing reasons, but also promoting it for staff engagement reasons and getting people excited about the work and for peers in the market space that might see that social purpose work and be inspired to build a social purpose for themselves. So strategy, measurement, and telling the stories.
So does it engagement with you start at the board or top tier management level and then unfold from there?
Often, yeah. It's usually a C-suite that pulls us in. There are sort of some people will call us because they're interested in a particular certification and want our help to achieve it. So that might be in a department. Some people will call us in because they're ready to do a new strategic plan, and that's typically a CEO or a senior leadership team and perhaps a board. Sometimes it's about a major new opportunity, an inflection point in the business, a merger or an acquisition, and that might be a board that's calling us in. But all of them, it's really about what are we setting out to achieve? How are we going to measure our progress along the way? And how are we engaging our stakeholders on the journey?
We haven't dug into this concept, but do you also help companies that say, we want to go through the process of certification to become a B Corp?
We do.
You can help there.
Yeah, we do a lot of
that. Because that is a big process, isn't it?
It can be a very, very big process. Yeah, some of our clients are big international firms, so they're certifying multiple businesses and rolling up to the single certification. It can get very complicated, but it's really worthwhile.
Yeah, but it takes time. You have to have a long-term vision. Yeah. And, you know, it's fantastic that you've been able to find this opportunity to help other companies realize their social purpose, and in the process, realize your social purpose.
Indeed.
Thanks, yeah, Mike.
Thanks, Stu.
Thank you for listening, and please visit conversationsthatmatter.ca and become a subscriber. And thank you to Audlin Brown, BD Developments, and Stem Cell Technologies for their support.